Welcome to Designing Futures, exploring AI, data, architecture, and beyond. In this podcast, we dive deep into the insights, groundbreaking ideas, and innovative approaches shared by our guests.
Together, we explore the immense potential of AI for architecture and design, unraveling its remarkable possibilities and acknowledging the challenges it presents.
A couple of months ago, before the AI Act was enforced, we had the privilege of recording a session with acclaimed author Marc Lévy, where he delved into important questions about AI and accountability. As the EU AI Act has recently reached a provisional agreement and is about to pass, we thought it would be beneficial to provide some context for our session with Marc. We believe this will help you, our dear audience, and us to better understand the implications of the AI Act. Therefore, as an intro, we had the pleasure of welcoming Diane Heward-Mills for a short interview. Diane is an acclaimed data privacy barrister in London who shared valuable insights on the EU AI Act's adoption of a risk-based approach. So let's start and listen to her before hearing Marc Lévy's perspective on AI and accountability, which will play directly after Diane's introduction.
Hello, Diana. So it's a real honor for us to have you on our podcast. Diane, you are a qualified barrister with an in-depth understanding of privacy risk and compliance. You are passionate about data, dignity, and diversity. And you are the founder and CEO of Heward-Mills LTD, Data Protection Officer. In 2021, you were as well the Great British Businesswoman finalist. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to join you.
So we thought as a first question to ask you to bring a little bit about some clarity about the EU AI Act, if you can first tell us when did it pass? And when are companies required to implement it?
Well, this is a great question. And the first thing I'll say is it's such a fast-moving place at the moment in terms of developments on the Act itself. So we have a political agreement on the Act. And as of today, February, we have a leaked draft of what we consider will be the final version of the AI Act. And so we'll know what that version is when it's published in the official journal. We anticipate that's going to be any time soon that we'd have that publication. And essentially, what happens is the Act becomes enforceable typically 2 years after it's published in the official journal. But there are nuances currently being proposed with the AI Act. So there are certain provisions that will come into effect. So already you can see for businesses, right? You know, how do you keep abreast of all of this? And how do you understand when the obligations actually bite and come into effect? And what is it that you have to do? But we're already starting to see this idea of unacceptable, prohibited, high risk, limited risk, minimal risk. And we're hoping to get further clarification around that sort of categorization over time.
Okay, so that bounces probably to the next question, that is, like, if you could provide with a general overview of the new AI Act and its primary objectives, actually.
Yeah, so I think, again, you know, we mentioned Europe being a first mover in this space and really wanting to set standards on the governance of AI. So the primary objective is to focus on how to regulate the, I guess, the development, marketing, the use of AI-based products and services across Europe. So it's a sort of a horizontal approach because it's a regulation. And so that means it would be universally binding and enforceable across all member states. So it's this idea of a harmonizing, holistic approach towards a sort of comprehensive strategy for regulating AI.
How does the AI Act address issues of accountability and transparency in AI systems?
So I think the issues of accountability and transparency are always built in by design. So there is this expectation, especially when an AI has been identified as high risk, that there are specific instructions around how that AI can be deployed and used. So there is a requirement to identify the details of who is providing this AI, right? And if the AI systems, services are being deployed within Europe and the provider is outside of Europe, well, they will require an authorized representative in Europe. So effectively, they will be within the reach of the European authorities. So I guess, you know, what that is signaling is you cannot develop these systems outside of Europe, utilize them within Europe, and feel that you're not going to be subject to these very high standards and strict requirements. Also, any risks to fundamental rights, so to the human rights of individuals or health and safety of individuals, the groups or group which the AI is tended to be used on, and then also specificities around the input data, right? The training, the testing of the data sets, and any changes that are expected over time to the system, and how the over the lifetime of the system, how the system is going to be maintained, and what measures, what ongoing accountability measures are going to be put in place. So really, in much the same way as the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, which seeks to regulate and govern the use of personal data and privacy, you can see how the approach here is having a kind of like framework for regulation that businesses, organizations will have to operate within. And there's a high focus on documentation and also having this idea of kind of human oversight. As a data protection officer, that's very much the role that we play within organizations. We're sort of an independent, effectively compliance officer, overseeing the data protection, privacy programs and approach of organizations. And AI is going to fit within that. There will be, I anticipate, growing requirements for this independent oversight, ethics boards within organizations that have independent individuals to validate the approach being taken in the use of AI. So that's, you know, essentially what I see in the direction of travel we can anticipate.
So according to what you say, I mean, first, the foundation of the data is extremely important, and that is aligned a bit with the GDPR, as you explained right now. And in terms of transparency, if I understand well, for every stakeholder or every company, it's extremely important for them to make sure that the company that they're working with, if they're the third party, that they're actually completely transparent and accountable in terms of every AI product or services that they offer and create, so that it's actually the company that's going to use it or propose the services for the clients that is actually going to be accountable as well to make sure that the services that they are using is completely compliant with the new EU AI Act.
And that's a really great point, because again, there's a further nuance in identifying what role are you actually playing. And the Act proposes a number of different roles, some of which are overlapping, actually. So you've got to consider, am I a provider? Am I a developer? Am I an importer or a distributor of the AI? Am I a product manufacturer? All of these different roles have specific obligations. Am I the authorized representative? So you need to really consider the role that you're playing. And again, you know, have that accountability, transparency, and documentation as a business around the use of AI.
Okay. If I go a little bit backwards, sorry, but the EU Act, if I understand, has four different segments of risk, right?
Sure. So there are certain types of AI that are prohibited. So they're considered to have a sort of an unacceptable risk. And the sorts of AI that we anticipate, and again, there's going to be further information provided on this over time. We'll get an understanding, because actually one of the criticisms is how clear are these classifications, and is there a scope for sort of overlap or confusion around how AI systems are indeed classified? But the AI systems that are thought to have a sort of acceptable risk are those that can be used to manipulate. How are we going to interpret that? Any AIs that are involved in social scoring, where you have the sort of real-time facial recognition that could be used in a way that's oppressive and harmful. So given the sort of fundamental kind of human right approach, the way in which AI use is being regulated within Europe, you can understand, you know, how that sort of unacceptable risk can be associated with that category of AI. And then there is the sort of AIs that are considered to be high risk. And I think AIs that are deployed in the context kind of like of an employment relationship, where you have vulnerable groups, children. And there is a move towards following more of a sort of product liability type regulation over these types of AI. AI that is considered to have a limited risk and perhaps actually quite a high percentage of AI will fall into high or limited risk, right? Just because of the nature of how AI is developed. And there, the transparency requirements are all important. So we talked about, you know, documenting contact details of responsible individuals, the sort of capabilities, limitations, security, impact on health and safety. Typically, the way in which you would look at this and document is through what's called a data protection impact assessment, where you set out, you know, all the requirements and ways in which you've identified risk and how you're going to mitigate those risks. And then finally, AI, where there's thought to be minimal risk, and where codes of conduct will be encouraged and drafted. And so, you know, one of the criticisms is this quite arbitrary, really? And could you find systems falling between different categories, and how would that be resolved? How would that tension be resolved? And the US in particular, the approach for regulating privacy, it's very consumer driven, and there tends to be a more sectorial approach. So, you know, regulating for particular sectors, the creative sector, the financial services, employment, because that way the regulation can be more targeted in contrast to this sort of umbrella holistic approach that Europe is taking. But we will see, you know, we'll see how the different regimes develop. And for businesses that deal across different regions, again, it's, you know, coming to an understanding of where and how do I comply when operating across multiple regions and jurisdictions.
Okay. So it's going to be less, I mean, it's going to be a bit less crazy and free in a way. I'd like to, it pushes us to the next question and almost at the end, but I'd like to ask you really how, and from your perspective as well, how does the AI Act balance innovation with ethical consideration and user protection? I mean, the more you have constraints and regulation, how do you balance that basically with innovation in your perspective as a lawyer as well?
Yeah, and I guess I have a particular approach to this, acting as a data protection officer, as I do for many you know, multinational organizations that are wrestling with this now. So, you know, in terms of operating in a data-driven environment, how do you balance innovation with regulation? And I truly believe that they're not mutually exclusive. And in fact, it's necessary to have both. I had a very good analogy used of a car, right? We can drive our car with confidence because we know we've got both an accelerator and a brake. And we know there's kind of, you know, rigorous health and safety requirements that have applied, you know, in the development of that car that whomever has developed it has had to be mindful of and meet requirements on. And there's enforcement if you fall beneath those standards, right? So you're also protected as an individual. And I think that's, you know, it's a very useful analogy to hold when we're thinking about, you know, AI systems and how they're being developed. And I think, you know, Europe has this particular approach. There was a high-level expert group set up to advise on what the sort of conditions for trustworthy AI should be, and the high level points raised in terms of building that trust, because this is all about, like, you know, trust building. There's this idea that there has to be respect for human autonomy as we develop AI systems, that we need to have at the forefront this idea of protection and prevention of harm to individuals, of fairness, of recognizing that, you know, models can have what's this called, this sort of hallucination, where you think something is right, but actually you can have sort of a false positive embedded. And that there has to be a degree of explicability. So, you know, you've got to be able to explain the AI, and fundamentally also, you know, data protection and privacy. If you haven't got a good basis and a foundation of compliance and privacy and data protection, trying to build trust in the use of AI is going to be a huge, huge challenge.
It's very interesting, actually, that you're giving the car example, because Marc Levy is giving as well, actually, that example from a different perspective. And I think it's a very smart one, actually, to understand how technology at one point was well regulated and how important and good it did for society.
I think this idea of different approaches being developed in different regions and keeping abreast of all of those, because if you're going for a kind of fundamental human right horizontal approach across Europe, and you're going for a more kind of sectorial consumer protection approach in the US, for example, what happens for organizations that are operating across these regions, which is very typical.
Thanks, Anne. It's a passionate thing. Passion, I'm translating from French. It's really very interesting. I was just very interested to ask, like, from a very practical point of view. So I have an architectural practice. We use AI tools for the moment, exploring them mainly, and also as part of some of the work that we submit and present to clients. So what will it mean in the future for us? I know that with the GDPR, we had to abide and write, you know, a disclaimer and have it on our website, etc. This is much more deep and embedded in the kind of work we do on a day-to-day basis. So I was wondering, will the Act also apply to us as users? What are the risks? Of course, we can see risks of copyrights, which is the first thing we think about it, but can you already foresee other risks that creative companies might have in these classification of the four levels of risks that you've discussed? And what does it mean? Will we need to kind of have an organization like yours that helps us ensure that everything we do every few months is up to date with the AI developments?
Yes, and I do feel for, you know, organizations, because this area is complex, you know, and as we have already touched upon, there are, you know, a number of nuances, and you may not have the expertise within your organization to advise. But I think this is where, as I mentioned, if you've got a good foundation on GDPR, on data protection and privacy. This would be a question of building on that. And yes, absolutely, sometimes you just need to get the experts in, right? You know, when my plumbing goes, there's certain things that I can do and other things that I just I get the plumber in and fix it properly, and then it can be maintained thereafter. So I do think, yes, absolutely, it's a matter of getting good and expert advice in this field, because it is so critical. And then, yes, you mentioned the use of AI within the organization. There'll be third party tools. So what's your, you know, third party due diligence like? You know, what have they done to assure you in terms of the standards that they have applied? But ultimately, you know, if you are using, you know, as a business, as an organization, you've got to be able to take that responsibility for your use and be able to kind of document your compliance around the use of AI tools. But it sounds like you're doing a good job. You've thought about your GDPR obligations, and you've got a good foundation there. So it's sort of adding and enhancing, evolving that.
Great. Thank you for the answer. I have one last question, maybe, Tess, because obviously there's been a lot of talk about whether this is coming too late, the regulations, whether it should have we should have started before. But I suppose a lot of the examples you're giving and that we are made aware of today also comes through the fact that we've already been using these tools for about a year and a half, and that we can now understand what the risk lies in them. And as such, these regulations really could not have happened maybe earlier. And at the same time, I suppose they benefit from what we've learned from the risks of social media as well.
Absolutely. And I think also, certainly the UK's approach is to look to see how there can be regulation put in place without stifling innovation. So there's a sort of question around, okay, what type of regulation is the UK going to issue in this space? Europe's first out of the gate. Post-Brexit, the UK has an opportunity to design its own framework, and very interesting times ahead, because will they follow the US, perhaps, you know, more sectorial approach, or this sort of horizontal fundamental human rights approach, or will there be something in between? It's you know, let's wait and see. But in the meantime, the things that businesses can do to prepare themselves and to be compliant now, today, and on a go forward basis.
And last, I guess, as a kind of maybe a joke, but will there be enough people to read all these statements, or is there going to be an AI reading through them?
I like that. I mean, there always has to be that human oversight, right? So ultimately, we want to remain in control of the machines for as long as is humanly possible to. How about that?
That's a great way to conclude. Thank you so much.
This short conversation with Diane provided us with great perspectives on many of the points that were raised during our casual conversation with Mark Levy a few weeks earlier. Mark has always been quite vocal about the dangers of uncontrolled development of these tools. So let's now listen to Mark Levy's perspective on the need for accountability and responsibility in the age of AI in this conversation we had with him earlier this year.
Hello, Mark. Your journey has taken you through diverse fields, the tech industry to architecture, and eventually becoming a renowned writer. You began your career with the Red Cross while studying IT at Dauphine, Paris. In 1988, you pioneered an image processing solution, a tool that was in many ways ahead of its time, eventually leading you to Silicon Valley. After several years there, you returned to France and co-founded an architecture firm specializing in office design before gaining fame as a writer we know today. So first, Mark, thank you for being here. It's a real honor for us to have you as a guest to discuss your perspective on AI, especially given your unique blend of experience in tech, architecture, and creativity. Mark, we thought we would start with discussing both the benefits and the risks that we see with artificial intelligence emerging in the field of creativity and in our society in general. Do you want to maybe start describing a few of the benefits that obviously AI tools have brought on society recently?
Sure. The benefit of AI. Benefit of AI is the same as the benefit of any new technological development. But before all, I think it would be very interesting to ask to a major developer of AI how they would define themselves. What is intelligence artificial? Because it's very unclear. Is it a super algorithm? Is it really an intelligence? Is it capable of getting very fast a lot of data and from those data create new combination of data, which is not creativity, just calculation? Is it capable of thinking? Will it be capable of judgment? So with every technological development, you have hopes and scariness. Because finally, when you see Facebook, it's an uncontrollable company developed by people who cannot understand themselves what they have done. The devastation on the young generation, the amount of suicide, the loss of identity by thousands, the addiction created, the bloodbath created by fake news running on. And all the time, you know, we have Zuckerberg coming on screen every time that he's on the bench of a trial. He says, oh, because, you know, we don't know how to manage it. We're going to try to do our best. I believe that when you do something which affects society, you have a responsibility. Not 10 years later. If I manufacture a car and there is a default in the brake system and 1,000 people die, society expects me to go in jail. Not only because I killed 1,000, but because if I don't go in jail, it means that anybody can do the same shit that I do without being held accountable. So my belief about AI, it's full of nuance, which is very hard to explain, because one of the consequences of Zuckerberg's invention is the destruction of every nuance in the way of we think. We need OpenAI to make a public statement. This is what we are developing. This is where we will be in the next 5 years. There is no industry company building a factory, a huge factory, with big chimney, with every sign that, you know, war would worry the people living around, and they would say, no, it's a grid. I can't tell you what we're going to manufacture in this.
So is it here somehow the notion of accountability through transparency, to be aware, to hear those companies, what they have in mind and what they want to develop?
Absolutely. Today's developer of AI needs to understand, they need to know, and they need to feel that they are accountable. And if someone dies because of their creation, they will be held accountable exactly as if they were developing a bicycle, and because they missed something about the security of the bicycle, because to make a little bit faster their money, they were, you know, deciding, you know, to lose a security option, a child would, you know, would die on that bike. They need to understand that virtual world has real effect on concrete world. And they can't live in this, you know, crazy bubble of virtuality where whatever I do, it's virtual. So, you know, I'm not accountable. Today, if you work at Facebook, shamelessly, you're not accountable for anything. If you're an employee of Facebook, you don't have any moral responsibility. I mean, you might have yours. And if it's not shut down and censored by your management, you don't. And I've never seen Facebook apologizing for all the shit that they have done to society. And it's huge. And if you want my opinion of benefit and inconvenience of Facebook, it's terrible. It's really terrible. The only real beneficiary of Facebook is the higher-ranked people that are really well paid at Facebook and the billionaire, you know, that was made about Facebook. The rest of society and for use, it's a disaster. But I'm not saying that social network is a stupid invention, but the way that Facebook has managed this invention is a disaster. And it's still a disaster. And after all the mistakes, they still have not been made enough accountable so that they will correct their own mistake. And look at what Elon Musk has done with X, which now carries really his name because it's more a porn social network than it's an anti-social network. And it's terrible because when you listen to people today about X, they talk more about the loss of value under the management than the loss in society made by this network, which became the tower of hate, of fake news. And can you imagine, listen to this, a man, because he was rich, spent $40 billion to create a worldwide platform of disinformation, making believe that this was going to be the platform of free speech, which is absolute bullshit. So when we are at the very, very early stage of AI, it is, and I understand that our lawmakers are, there is a generational gap. There is something they need to apply to AI, which is the same logic that is being to apply to every other developer of every other technology, concrete technology. What is virtual is not less responsible than what is physical.
We find ourselves here with an additional issue, though, is that the effects of these tools spread worldwide, and they're not necessarily linked to a particular regulation of a Western society or a different type of legal societies. How do you see that gap being able to be bridged?
By making responsible the people who develop it, because they are not worldwide. You know, they have an office, and even if they work from home, they have name. Virtuality is not a phantasm. Virtuality is just a way of denying your responsibility.
What is interesting in the way that you present the thing is like you are telling here about even thinking about a framework for having that accountability. It doesn't necessarily obviously need to be one or two person, but as a company,
of course,
to create an advisory board or create really a whole structure that will have to think about those questions and bring accountability to the whole development of what they're doing in, on a larger scale.
Well, if after the terrible bloodbath in Myanmar because of fake news spread by Facebook and uncontrolled by Facebook, and despite, you know, all the bullshit from the Facebook team saying, oh, you know, we're just a platform, we're not responsible about, you know, what we do and, you know, what goes on our platform. If Facebook had been condemned by $1 billion in damage, they would have taken measures because it's the only thing that can interest them, you know, the cost of penalty and the cost, you know, of misleading society. And when the balance, you know, a long, long time ago, the tobacco industry used what was called the merchant of doubts. And there is a wonderful documentary about that. And the merchant of doubt was corrupted doctors or corrupted advisor or specialists. It was, you know, to go on television show and on medical boards or on trial to convince people that not only there was no harm, you know, by smoking, but you could have eventually some benefits. Mm-hmm. When a shift happened really in the worldwide consumption of tobacco, when tobacco company had to pay hundreds of millions of dollars. So then at that time, the board of shareholders, which are only interested by profit and very rarely by human values, decided, oh my God, this way is going to cost more money than it's going to bring us. So here is AI. We have a very, very short window of time to make people accountable before they create damages. And we all can smell damages. It would be very pessimistic to think just about the damage, and we're going to talk about all the benefits. So here we just have an amazing opportunity before it starts to point at these. Well, you know, because when you say OpenAI, just to name them, OpenAI, it's not just something very cool. It's a company. You know, there is shareholder, there is people, there is engineer, there is developers, there is, they need to be accountable. If you're an engineer and you work on a program to launch a shuttle in the space, and the shuttle, you know, not only missed the launch, but it falls on a city and kills, you know, 25,000 people. You think the engineer that did that should be held accountable? And the company that launched the intention was great, huh? Launching a new satellite. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not more complicated than that. Now we can start to name all the benefits and the risk of AI.
No, I think, of course, always the balance between the two. We mentioned a few of the benefits, obviously the speed at which, for example, during COVID, the research and the implication of AI and jabs were able to be developed and distributed worldwide, to name a few. And in many industries, we discussed as well, in an industry that is closer to us, in architecture and urban studies, the potential that it will have to solve problems of transportation, for example, of sustainable use of materials, environmental factors, and so on. So, of course, the benefits of these are great and what they will bring to society as well. But we are really at this moment of the unknown of how do we put a limit between the benefits of its development and where, at what point that could go wrong? Is there a risk of this becoming sort of autocratic voice of one way of doing things because the machine said so?
I think that, I mean, there is thousand and thousand risks, and I think we can categorize them in very few categories. The risk and the accountability should be always present in the head of anybody. When you create, design, and build something as simple and complicated as a building, accountability is everywhere. You know, I mean, really, it's literally everywhere. Every worker working on the construction of the building feels accountable. I mean, if one joint in one wall is lazy and there is a leak in the wall, you can damage the wall. And if the window is not properly well, a child might, you know, go through the window. And if the guy who put the rail guard, and if the roof. So when you think about a building as complicated and simple, everybody on the side is held accountable. And if he screws him, he knows that people will go after him. And that's why buildings are safer and safer. And even in countries where corruption has corrupted the way buildings are processed, they go after the developer and they put them in jail because they lie to the people. It is as simple as that. Facebook, Twitter became a nightmare because the people working at Facebook, the single people at Facebook, are more afraid of saying, we shouldn't do that. Their boss, even when they are convinced they shouldn't do something, then what they risk, legally speaking, by doing something that they know is wrong. They are not scared about, if they are not really scared, as an electrician is scared every day. An electrician, you know, when he wired two wires, if he has a doubt, he can't let it go because he knows, you know, that if by mistake he did the wrong thing, he can put the whole building in fire. We need to have this level of preoccupation at every employee of the AI development company. And in every company that use their tool to develop, you know, because that's once we are there, people will think why developing before releasing it to the market.
Does that then mean that we need more people thinking of what the consequences are?
Well, we need to have, and that's, you know, where you define what is the intelligence. I'm sure that the developer of AI somehow feels more intelligent than an electrician. Because, you know, he's seen that his tool is more intelligent. He's not. He's not. Definitely not. Mm-hmm. An electrician is probably much more intelligent, feels more responsible about his work than, you know, a young engineer or an old engineer, you know, that, you know, don't even think about what he's doing, but he's just excited by the power he's getting from what he's developing. So when we say that we have to define what is artificial intelligence, we have to define what is human intelligence and, you know, and how people are using their intelligence. I was having a conversation not so long ago with a very brilliant young man who developed a technology that he sold to young people, teenagers. And his technology was, you know, mainly the ID network of young people. You could track your friends, know exactly where they are. And you could even know, you know, if, for example, you were visiting one other of your friends. And so if you were in the same perimeter, you could right away, you know, so you can develop all the benefits. The base of the technology was young people being able to track other young people. And one day he sold this company to another big major company and he became a multimillionaire. If this is intelligence, then I prefer being stupid. When I was working in Silicon Valley, if any guy had come with such a fucked up idea, everybody would have not only laughed at him, but say, are you fucking mad? I mean, you want to make money by helping young people to track other young people, and then you sell this product to a big company that will track all young people, track their movement, and try to influence their life. That's what you want to do? Oh my God, leave the room. That would have been, you know, what we saw when we stopped the internet. Today, for doing that, you know, you're becoming rich. So that's it. You know, it will always come to the same thing. People need to be held accountable of what they're doing.
Mark, you talked as well about this aspect of de-responsibilizing the human as a decision maker. I think we are attracted always as humans to something else making decisions for us. And there's clearly this aspect with AI as well that is maybe comforting for a few, that actually something else is making the decision. What do you think about that?
So one of the dangers of intelligence artificial is to give you the perfect blanket to hide, you know, whatever you do, because you took the decision, oh, it's not us, it's AI. It's an excuse that, you know, has been used a lot of time by the social network handler. Oh, it's not us, it's the algorithm. Who made the algorithm? And who is responsible? Can you imagine on the high train speed crash, and the train company say, oh, it's an automatic train, it's not our fault, you know, it's the algorithm. Yeah, but you know, who runs the algorithm? So yes, AI might be a step back in human intelligence if it helps to give to AI the final cut.
You were talking about it as well, for example, in the world of edition, where decisions are made to cut controversial matters and such. How much does it kill creativity?
Well, that's a very interesting process, and we have to make a little step back to understand how it works. So one of the effects of the social network was to give very, very, very loud voice to cancel culture. Let's be clear. There is nothing like cancel culture. It's called censorship. Basta. If you don't understand that art, literature, cinema are here to provoke, you have not understood anything about, you know, what is art, the origin of the world. Is an extremely shocking painting for a lot of culture. Even Facebook, in their craziness, started, you know, to hide a part of the painting. Everybody came to them and say, are you crazy? And we can see already what the effect of this crazy movement are on the cultural aspect, because definitely a lot of things are being canceled because judged too provoking. So you have the combination of two phenomena which are quite devastating for culture. A lot of publishing houses, especially in the United States, are now hand-on by corporate guys. So instead of having publishers, you have corporate guys, and corporate guys, they don't care shit about culture, they just care about profit. So when they analyze a book, they don't analyze, you know, the importance, the societal importance of the book, the cultural vehicle of such a story. They just try to understand how much money they're going to make about the book. And of course, by making money, they are thinking right away about, okay, what are the risks? Because launching a book, you know, costs a little bit of money, nothing compared to a movie, but it costs a little bit. So right now, they have what they call the sensibility reader, which for me is the absolute antinomy of the ethic of a publisher. For me, a publisher that hires insensibility readers, it's not a publisher. It's a businessman or a businesswoman, but it has nothing to do with the world of publishers. Don't tell me you're a publisher if you have a sensitive reader, because if you have a sensitive reader, it means that you're not capable yourself to judge and to make your own opinion, and you have absolutely not the intelligence of a publisher. Yeah. But still, there is a lot of publishing now that use sensitivity reader, which are absolute bullshit of people that can feel indignant. You know, every day they will find a new reason to be indignant about, you know, my God, this is so shocking. But still, the only hope is that they are human. Which means that the non-publisher can be fired one day. You know, we can say, okay, stop. You know, I mean, stop. And the sensitivity reader, you know, if it becomes too excessive, you know, or if he's if he cannot justify his decision, we can say, okay, stop your bullshit. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen when it's an algorithm that makes this decision? Who will have the strings in front of a board of directors to say, I don't care what the AI tells you. The origin of the world is a master painting and should be put in this way. What's going to happen if one day at the MoMA, you know, is directed by an AI and the AI is the one deciding? I'm going to give you a short story. I co-wrote a TV show. In this TV show, there is one thing which is in a museum in Berlin, and there is a Greek statue of a man. An Arabic airline wanted to buy the show and to display the show. in the airplane. And they ask to modify a few things. And among these things, they ask to blurry the genitals. Mm-hmm. And so I took in consideration that, you know, and I said, you know, shall I accept or shall I refuse? It's a 5-second picture. You know, the statue has nothing to do with the story, has nothing to do with the values carried on by the story. And with a very open-minded, I decided to say, you know, okay, they are shocked culturally by that. It's absolutely acceptable. Because it's, you know, it's something they're not asking me to destroy this segment of the movie in its original version. They're just saying for us it's a little bit too much. After all, in the United States, I believe, you can literally come on a TV show with a gun, with a loaded gun at your belt. But if you say fuck, you will hear, you know, the beat like it's there. Everybody says fuck, you know, every day. It's probably one of the words the most you will use, but you're not allowed to hear it. So every culture has, and so I say, okay, I'm fine with that. You want to blur it. You're not, I mean, they don't ask to destroy the statue, mm-hmm. they just ask you to blur nudity, which is a cultural thing. Why am I telling you this mm-hmm. story? Because some people might argue, you know, that I was wrong. I shouldn't have blurred the Greek statue. Some people might agree, yeah, of course you should, because it's not the purpose of the story. And so it's more important that, you know, the story goes out than, you know, this mm-hmm. Greek statue, and they don't ask you to bomb the statue. They can be a debate, you know, whether it's wrong and whether, and it might be wrong, but it's a human. And I took the responsibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, the airline company didn't ask to an algorithm to mm-hmm. make a decision. They asked me. Mm-hmm. And I had the power to say yes or no. And if I say no, they would probably say, fine, we don't show it on our plane because, you know, we don't want the kid to see that, and it's shocking. Even if the plane is flying to Paris and they're going to bring their kids to the Louvre, well, the statues, but it's fine. But to understand, it's a human decision. And it's very important, because what makes us human is our capability to debate. Mm-hmm. And you know, this conversation about, you know, do we blurry or do we not blurry, or do we blurry or do we not blurry, can last, you know, for hours of dinner around a table with people arguing. And then voices can express themselves. And if some, you know, if the director of the series, you know, have told me there is no way they can, you know, blurry one frame, I would have respected his decision, because he would have been the creator. So the big concern about AI is that we are dealing right now with an extremely worrying regress. The one that controls the past controls the future. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely true. It's what the Russian tried to do in Ukraine, even bombing cemetery of artists so they can disappear. There would be no trace at all. There is extraordinary setback in cultural freedom. But it can be a great tool, because, you know, when AI works to process a vaccine in the middle of a pandemic, it's a wonderful tool. If AI helps us to develop more, better engineered buildings, if AI can work, you know, on great solutions for climate, on security, on science, I mean, there is a lot of benefit of getting supercalculation, a lot. And once again, when we started this discussion, I told you the example of cars. Cars has changed the world, and mostly in a positive way. And even if there is a phase, you know, of pollution, we will get rid of that, and still the benefit of fast transportation is, of course, a benefit. It's the same for AI.
So accountability will bring it to something even more positive than ever. So once we have accountability, we can use it to something that is actually taking and geared towards a very positive and big
use. I mean, sadly, corruption in money and power, the addiction of corruption, of making money and of getting power. And that's a fact, which doesn't deny the existence of wonderful people and wonderful devoted people and people that act, you know, by faith and you know, by value. Of course, they are. Hopefully, they are. But you just need a very, very few amount of our highly corrupted people to break the complete chain of society and to have devastating consequences. You just need a very, very few of corrupted developers to build unsafe building along a river that will eventually, you know, overflow. and kill thousands of people, or to build unsafe building in a seismic place where when an earthquake will arrive, you know, thousands of people will die in the rumble. It needs a very few amount of corrupted people to destroy a lot of life and the life of many people. So we don't need regulation for the pleasure, you know, of taking our freedom. We need regulation to protect society. The only way to make them understand that whatever profit they can make, the cost of corrupted process will be higher than the profit.
Get to talk about it again in a few months or years' time to see where all this has left. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much.
We greatly appreciate you tuning into our podcast. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics you'd like us to explore, we would love to hear from you. You can find our contact information in the show notes or on our website.
Thank you again for being part of our podcast community. Stay tuned for more engaging discussions, captivating stories, and valuable insights.